The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got DC on the phone there wanting to know if you can handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Paramedic 22 is off scene.
Yeah,
hi and welcome to EMS Garage for September 13th, 2008. This is episode 2, Motivation in EMS.
Welcome to the EMS Garage, found at www.emsgarage.com. I am your host, Chris Montera, and this week I'm joined by Dave Ross. Dave, where are you from and what do you do?
I am from Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I am an EMS medical director for a number of agencies in our area, including the AMR Colorado Springs location, all of Teller County, which is to our west, and a number of El Paso County fire departments, as well as some agencies out east. I have Carson EMS and also Cheyenne County EMS. And I work at Penrose Hospital as an emergency physician.
Excellent. And you are heavily involved in not only, I think you write a column monthly, or is it quarterly for GEMS?
Well, I do a column that's every 2 months for GEMS.com. It's a column called Case in Point. And then I write a little bit more haphazard in terms of frequency, a column for EMS1.com. It's called Out of the Box.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And I'll definitely give you guys a chance to plug your shows at the end of the podcast, but plug them at the beginning, too. We're also joined by the ever-great Tom Dick. And, Tom, what are you doing these days?
Sorry for the delay.
That's okay. No problem.
I'm the quality care coordinator for Platte Valley EMS in Brighton, Colorado.
And you write many, many articles, as well as books and other things.
Oh, I write two columns for EMS Magazine, and I write a column for GEMS.
Oh, great. Excellent. And do you have anything? We'll get into that in a minute. And then also, as he calls himself, the kid on the block, Ben Denker. Boy, Ben, I'm going to mess up your name. Just go ahead and tell me what it is. Nin. Again, I can't. It's, for some reason, it's the G and the R together that mess me up.
Yeah, it's a good Dutch name. It's Dingerink. It wouldn't be the first time he's messed up.
All right, Ben, what do you do?
I'm a supervisor at the Summit County Ambulance Service over in Frisco, Colorado, and that's about it these days.
And you're a fellow EMS geek like me, so I think that maybe that's why we bond so well together in our geekiness.
Yeah.
This week, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the top EMS stories of the week to start out the show. And you know, Ben, that story about the paramedic that shot himself, shot somebody else. Where did that happen?
I was up in Fort Collins. I just navigated away from it. Yeah, just outside of Fort Collins, a poor guy was in a fight and supposedly trying to intimidate a guy when it says his gun accidentally went off and he shot the gentleman. It sounds like it was a non-fatal wound or anything, but then fortunately I was able to run out to his truck and grab his EMS bag and tend to the man until an ambulance arrived.
Oh, gosh.
Wasn't he trying to help his daughter or something? Wasn't he trying to protect his daughter? Or maybe
his girlfriend. His girlfriend. Yeah, it says it right here. If you go to KMGH, Ben will send you the link, and I'll post the link online. It says that he was apparently trying to protect his fair maiden. That's a nice thing.
That's very, very chivalrous.
With a gun.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was wearing armor. I don't know. That would be kind of interesting. But I think the true story comes back to you know, after he was done, what did he do, Ben? He went and he got his bag out of the car. Is that right?
Yeah, it just says he accidentally shot the guy and realized what had happened, and it sounds like ran out to his car, grabbed his EMS bag, and ran back in and performed care. So, kind of a sudden role reversal for the guy there.
So, are charges pending or no?
See, it says he's free on $7,500 bail. He was arrested on suspicion of assault and menacing.
Do you think you get time off for good behavior because you helped save the guy's life?
I guess you hope so.
I mean, man, the judge ought to at least let you do something like that.
Oh, there's that link again if you didn't get it, Tom.
I beg your pardon?
I just sent the link. Should pop up for you in your Skype to the article.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll be able to see that right on the right-hand side there, and then we'll post it later online. So, so then, go ahead.
I was just going to say I saw something pop up, but I didn't get it, and it sort of disappeared. Is there a way to access that link and make it come back up again?
Ben, just resend it to all of us again. That should work.
Yeah. I'm still figuring out this Skype thing, so. Try it now.
There you go. Yeah, moving right along. Did you guys see the article on the lady in Canada? I think it was in Port-au-Prince or somewhere like that, that was in the back of an ambulance and died because of as a result of an ambulance accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's not good.
When did that happen?
I'm trying to pull up the link now. Sorry, the internet here is really slow. I just crashed Firefox, so I can't tell you where. So talk amongst yourselves. Here's a topic. People dying in ambulance crashes.
Let's talk about Chris.
Let's not. It's a very bad topic. I was telling them before the show how you and I are... It's funny, we're right across the room from each other, or right across the hall from each other in a hotel here in South Fork, Colorado, which is a great place to be. My Firefox has completely died. So if somebody can access that online, that would be great. It should be posted on EMS Daily News. I don't.
And this is about somebody dying in an ambulance crash in Canada. You said?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I am on it.
Oh my goodness! I actually had to open Safari.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. I guess that. Yeah, there it is. Can't explain. It was in Nova Scotia.
Oh.
Where is that, at the bottom of the...
No, it's like it's two in. Cops seek answers for EMT driver. Investigators can't yet explain why an ambulance left a Nova Scotia highway on Wednesday, killing a female patient and injuring two paramedics. Yeah, that's... The ambulance veered onto the oncoming lane and then plunged into the ditch. You almost have to wonder if something happened to the driver.
Right. I mean, we're not going to be talking about ambulance safety, but obviously it's a big, big deal and is a concern across the country in terms of ambulance crashes. And estimates are somewhere between 10 and 35 times more likely for agencies to... be the recipient of a suit based on ambulance crashes versus medical malpractice misadventures.
Oh, hey, you guys. There is a big story on EMS Network in the crashes section. Looks like an ambulance hit a chopper on scene in New Jersey tonight.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, it says the ambulance rammed the helicopter while responding.
Good Lord.
Wow. How do you do that? That's crazy. Well, I think that next week we should definitely talk about ambulance safety and maybe talk about some of the things that each of us are doing in either locally or in the state or in the country even, and the ways we're trying to make ambulances safe and maybe even our responders. I know, have you guys gotten the chance to see Dr. Nadine Levick speak?
I have.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah, a lot of people go, Well, we're not so sure that we believe in her message, but I have to tell you, some of the things she says is pretty sound.
Yeah, and I mean, we can talk about it next week, but just a reminder that the state of Colorado is having an ambulance safety conference on October 3rd. So we can talk about that next week or whenever, but it'd be nice to get the word out.
Absolutely. And if anybody listening online has any other links to ambulance safety or things that they want to post online, we'll talk about those next week as well. Here's a interesting article. We kind of touched on this with Will and Will Dunn and Roger Coit last week, but San Francisco Fire loses their dominance over 911 ambulance in the city of San Francisco. Thoughts? Comments?
Well, I just saw that article too, and I don't know the details, but I think that, you know, we've seen some circumstances even in Denver where, you know, some of the public-based agencies are getting, you know, significantly carefully examined for response times and just their overall ability for EMS services. And it's been typically more the vendor that of a private ambulance service that's had to deal with that. But I think that, you know, as the city and county government scrutiny increases, I guess we'll see more of that.
I think we're all going to be more accountable for any kind of public money in the near future, especially with in view of the news from Wall Street.
Well, I think you make a good point, Tom, that I think people are going to make us be more accountable, not just to our taxpayers and to our shareholders or whatever the case may be, depending on what area you serve, but also in how we collaborate, not just within our community, but how do we extend the boundaries of what we're doing and pull people in.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's an interesting sign of the times. I think you know, to some degree, public agencies have been a little bit more immune to some of the scrutiny, but we're seeing that get expanded, and people are having to justify more and more whether they can provide the service, whether it's a government or a private provider.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that San Francisco Fire is the canary in the proverbial mine, that we'll see more and more fire services pull back from EMS, or...?
I can answer. I'll give a shot at this, but it certainly would be good to have the other guys talk about it as well. I don't think so. I think that, you know, I think that the reality of most fire services is that about 80% of their calls are medical. And so whether everybody on the fire service really likes doing medical or not, the reality is that's the bulk of their service. So I don't think they'll pull away from that at all. But I think that over time, we're going to see public EMS agencies and fire agencies being held to a consistently higher standard for response times. And we can argue back and forth how important those response times really are in terms of clinical benefit, and that's a whole different story. But as long as those response standards are in place and contract or whatever the agreement is, you know, we're starting to see more and more expectation for the public agencies.
Tom, do you have a thought, or?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different kinds of expectations, and unfortunately, response times have been the major thing that we've paid attention to in the past. It's because they're easy to measure. There's a lot of things that also are easy to measure that are important: turnaround time, task time, and so on. But a lot of things that are not so going to be responsible for all those things. You know, when you make Toyota parts, each part can be weighed, measured. You know exactly what concentration of different metals are in it, what its function is, where it fits, and so on. There are a lot of
immeasurable things that are very important in our job, and we've always really concentrated on the easy things to measure. A lot of the public agencies have been immune from that, like Dr. Ross says, but I think part of that is due to the fact that we have never agreed on what EMS is. Is it medicine? Is it public safety? What is it? And I think the public service view has always been that it's public safety. I think when you put a tube in somebody's throat that's either going to make them breathe or kill them, I think that's medicine.
That's a good point. Hey, Ben, what do you think?
I pretty much everything I've had has been echoed by Tom and Dave. I think, well, certainly it's not going to be a sign of fire services looking to pull back. It's definitely a sign of, I don't know, maybe as this thing starts to mature more and more and we know exactly what we're looking for and exactly what standards to hold people to, it's going to start being more and more calls for that. And big cities where it's much more evident are obviously, of course, going to be the first to start doing that.
Well, you know, I would like to see us soon take up take this up as a topic maybe on one of the future podcasts, but how do we differentiate ourselves in the coming years as a sole EMS provider in a community? And then how do you integrate well with the fire department even though you're not the same entity? I mean, I think those are very good topics for us to talk about that I think we can do a value add to local fire departments and we can work well with them and not necessarily have to be the same thing. I think oftentimes people think, well, I have a light on my ambulance and they go to the call, and well, there's a light and siren on the fire truck and they go to the same call, so they must be the same thing. And I think that as like Ben said, as we mature, there's got to be a way. So maybe I'd love to talk about this in depth sometime, because I think that we have some of the best people in the industry right here talking on this podcast, and we can at least give insight. I don't know if we can necessarily solve the world's problems, but it'll be fun anyway.
Yep, absolutely.
One more good news story here, and then we'll talk about how to motivate employees. Did you guys happen to see the where was it? Sorry, I'm trying to back up. Oh, well, I think this is probably a timely topic anyway, especially in rural America. It definitely is here, but having EMS agencies close, there was another one here in Colorado this week, and I'm pretty sure that there are others all around the United States closing, if not daily, probably weekly. And I think it may go back to this point of, you know, how do we survive with fire and EMS, and how do we survive, or how do we integrate better into public health and then kind of find ourselves? And I think oftentimes that it looks to that. So Platte Canyon Fire takes over the operation of an ambulance service that is now defunct in the state of Colorado. So again, I know that that's a Colorado-centric topic, but I think it speaks volumes to, again, some of those other issues that kind of surround this whole deal.
Well, I don't know, you know, the specifics of this at all. We had a service that operated in Park County, which is the same general area, although this is on the south side of Park County, and it was an EMS service, and it eventually closed, and its volume of patients, which were pretty low, was absorbed by a local fire department, and then an ambulance district based actually in Woodland Park, Colorado, which was probably 15 miles away, did the transports from there. So, and there, I think there were some problems with management of the EMS agency, the care, and some other issues that may have not really been related to, you know, EMS, you know, that were really issues. I think they were germane to the specific agency more than anything else. So I don't know what was going on here. But I think that, you know, to some degree, we're going to see consolidation in the future. We have to, because we're depending on in the rural areas, we're depending on a volunteer service, be it fire or EMS, with limited funding and very limited ability by the town, the county, or whatever is paying. And you know, if you lose enough of your personnel, you're just not going to be able to staff it anymore. Fortunately, in this case, it looks like Platte Canyon Fire District is going to pick up. But I think we're going to see more of this in the future for a variety of reasons, and it may not be all bad.
Could you explain what you mean by that, Dave? That it may not be all bad.
Well, yeah, because I think that there are issues to look at, and number one is what if a service closes, what's left to pick up the care of the patient, and if there are surrounding agencies that may actually be duplicating some of their service and staffing, if there are surrounding agencies that can actually take up the response for the patient and provide care, then perhaps there are, you know, too many agencies in that situation, and so it may not be all bad. I think consolidation in certain circumstances may be a good thing. Now, if it's a circumstance where it's one agency providing care and there's nobody within 40 miles or whatever, then that's a bad thing for the patients. But, I mean, as you know, Tom, you know, from writing in EMS Magazine, writing about the volunteer status, you know, we're kind of standing, I think, on a house of cards, especially in the rural areas, with volunteers staffing both fire and EMS agencies, and it's not a very strong foundation.
I think you're absolutely right about that, and I think there are plenty of people who can tell stories about situations in rural America where there are too many agencies, too many ambulances, and so on. On the other hand, I'm familiar with a number of situations where I don't want to say a fire department, all the ones I'm aware of were fire departments, where they took over a perfectly good service just because they wanted to. It wasn't necessarily better for the public. It wasn't necessarily better for the community or anything like that, but they wanted to. And I think that's about political power, and I'm dismayed about it. I know of a couple of instances in our state right now where that's happening.
And I don't know the circumstances of this case. Are you thinking that there may be some connection there with this particular situation?
I don't know anything about the Platte Canyon one. I just think there are two different kinds of scenarios unfolding here. The one in rural America is I think, going to get worse before it gets better. But I have seen a lot of nasty politics take place that were not good for the patients. They weren't good for the public. They were good for fire chiefs, or good for maybe not fire chiefs necessarily, but public administrators.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I think our goal, however we get there, is, you know, what we think is best for patients. However, depending on who's doing the measuring and the assessing, we may come up with different ways or different perceptions of what is good for the patient. I just, you know, my general thought in this is that I would like to see, I think, in our state, a consolidation of services with paid staff, at least making up the core body of an EMS service in a rural area that might actually be shared by perhaps one, two, or three counties that are getting the benefit of it. And it could be supplemented by volunteers. But I think that, you know, a lot of the agencies that I work with, we have volunteers. And, you know, we're blessed to have them, but then they have jobs, or they're retired, or they're doing other things besides EMS. And there is a difference in that regard versus somebody who's got that a full-time gig.
That's definitely an issue that's, you know, would scare the crap out of me if I lived in a really small rural area, and definitely the conundrum faced by rural EMS in general across the country, right?
Well, I think that you guys make great comments, and you know, the thing that always, I guess part of the part, I don't know, maybe Tom was trying to allude to this or not, I don't know, but I think the politics in an area where the fire department is hostily taking over an ambulance service is a much different deal than an ambulance service that's failing and somebody has to come in and take up the slack. And I think that he hit the nail on the head that oftentimes I think that the fire chiefs or whoever believe and sell the idea that, hey, it's the cash cow, and hey, we're going to make more money, and hey, we're going to do so much better for the community than what's already there. And then they get into it, a la San Francisco Fire, and find out it's kind of hard, and it's not easy to do this. So, you know, I think that time will tell. One thing I did want to point out really quick, because I think it's really awesome. There was an article in the Sussex Countian of course it's not dated, September 12th. There was an international competition held in Israel this year for paramedics to come in and show off their EMS skills, and the paramedic team of Holly Donovan, Stuart Hensley, Jill Wicks, and Robbie Murray competed. And they got third place. I think that's huge.
Wow.
40 teams from 12 countries, including Poland and Holland. We placed, right. They were the United States team, and they placed, third behind, Poland and Holland.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I think that's great. We need to encourage more things like that.
Well, can I just ask a dumb question? Isn't Sussex in England,
No, this is in it's from the Georgetown. Oh no, Sussex County's in Delaware.
It's in Delaware. Okay,
yeah.
I wasn't sure. Okay, it didn't happen to say who won first though.
It was either Holland or Poland. It didn't say. Which really surprises me that Poland would have a much more sophisticated EMS system than, I don't know, England or something like that. But apparently they won, so that's great. All right, so on to the topic of the night. Tell me, you guys have a differing experiences and just all around good ideas and what works. What have you found works to motivate? Maybe this is just a human motivation question in general, but maybe it's germane to EMS. What motivates EMTs and paramedics? How do you keep them that way? And you know, is cash king, or is something else better?
And I have to say real quick, I'm especially excited to hear this discussion from Dave and Tom, especially because that's something I've struggled with in my career as a supervisor already. So.
Well, I'll go ahead and jump in first, I'll speak primarily from my experience with AMR, which is, you know, a big agency running a lot of calls in the Colorado Springs and El Paso County area. And I think, you know, just in my encounters with those crews as well as all the other crews that I've worked with in other agencies, people go into this business because they truly want to help, and that's number one. I think most people probably are aware that the money's not huge, but they like the fact that they can intervene, maybe perhaps occasionally save a life. It makes them feel good. They want to help. It's cool. A lot of good reasons that motivate young people to get into it. But what has been a problem for us at AMR has been overwork, too many calls, people tired, you know, they arrive at the hospital and they can't complete their trip sheets and they're called out right away and over and over again. And so that wears in a busy system. I think that wears on people. And I think that's a big issue. And I think that, you know, it's important to give positive strokes, that people like that, obviously. So in a system where they're not getting it, that's an issue. And the third thing is what I hear repeatedly, even though I don't understand all of the retirement program benefits that they have, that generally when they look at public sector jobs like fire department positions or public sector EMS, they compare a retirement program that doesn't really measure up. I guess I would say, in our experience, decreasing the workload a bit in a busy system and providing a better quality retirement system would be initial steps.
I think there are some. I think I absolutely agree with Dave. I absolutely do. I think there are some people you can't motivate to do EMS, and a lot of people are not fussy enough about who they put in those ambulances, and I think they create monsters in the process, and that's a really important component. You have to find people who belong there in the first place. I think not just anybody can do this. It takes talent. It takes somebody pretty special to run ambulance calls, more than 90% of which are not going to be exciting. You have to tell them the truth.
I would agree with that.
Be excited. Pardon?
I was just going to say I would agree with that completely. And I know this was an emergency doc. People say, they come up to me, lay people, and they say, well, it must be really exciting working in an ER. You know, you're whatever you've got. You never know what's going to happen. It's one emergency after another. You save a life. You don't. You whatever. And it must be really cool. And my response is, well, there are moments when it's pretty exciting, but the majority of the time, you know, it's like any other job. It gets fairly routine. There's a sameness to it. It's just maybe a different kind of sameness than what some other people are used to. And the same is true with EMS. You're going to be running calls that are, you know, not very interesting, that maybe reflect social issues much more than acute medical or trauma management. You're going to wonder why, you know, people just don't get a ride or call a taxi, because you're, you know, a glorified taxi. And so, there is a certain sameness, and you have to kind of work through that. But that's true throughout medicine, and it's certainly true in emergency medicine.
So would you guys say that as maybe an industry, we're, in the context of this discussion at least, at a disservice being billed as the exciting profession, and that, you know, it's all lights and sirens and things like that?
I think there's a difference between being interesting and being exciting. And it's one of the reasons why I think somebody has to have the talent to do this. There are a lot of calls that aren't exciting that are very, very interesting. I think that ambulance is kind of like a college on wheels. And the reason I think that is different from working in a hospital setting. You go into people's environments and you see what they live with every day. You see a lot of details about their problems that maybe a nurse or a physician won't see in the ER. And I know that Dave knows this because he rides with his crews. But I don't know. I think just by way of examples, I think you know, you see more dignity in the poorest grape picker sometimes. You know, you see people who they live their lives with dignity. They die with dignity. They teach you how to live your life better. You meet people who have fascinating stories to tell you. you do get some exciting calls, but not when you expect them. The rest of the calls aren't necessarily boring, and I think one of the key ingredients for an EMT has to be that they like people in the first place. They're going to crap on your shoes, they're going to throw up on your uniform and everything. You got to like them in the first place, otherwise you won't be able to handle that stuff. And you have to be interested in them generally to ask them about themselves and listen to what they say. And that's everybody that you meet is somebody who's luckier than you are, and you spend 30 years, 20 years in working in ambulances, and I think if you let it, it can make you a wise person by the time you die, I don't know, that's just my observation anyway.
Okay, well, do you think that once the bloom's off the rose, thanks for painting the vomit picture, that's just a great thing, but so it's day 50,000 in my career, and here I am stuck in an ambulance. How does my employer motivate me to originally I showed up because, man, I was going to save a life and I was going to get to push all kinds of drugs, and now I'm a new paramedic and I get to do all kinds of good things, and I finally kill my first patient. I finally lose the first patient, unfortunately, because that's generally when we become a really good paramedic and we see somebody's life in our hands, and that's what changes us. But, okay, so after that day, is it money? Is it stuff? Is it days off? I think we all agree that there's an intrinsic person that we all want to, when I as a manager want to hire somebody, I say, that guy's a nice guy, and I'm going to hire him because he's good. I can hire good people. I can't make, and I can turn them into paramedics. I can't hire paramedics and turn them into good people. So now that we get that out of the way, how do I motivate them from that point?
Well, let me suggest a couple things. First of all, I think, people are different with, the person that you hire. They may obviously have a desire to be an EMT or paramedic. Hopefully they did at some point in time. But, I find this with physicians that I work with. Despite the fact that they went through relatively similar training and obviously had some sort of similar interest at one point in time, the fact is people are different. And some people are within a pool that are similarly trained are going to want to be leaders, are going to want something more. They're maybe going to want to move on, and some will not. And I think it's, first of all, you have to kind of identify, what, as a supervisor, if I were a supervisor, what the motivation of the individual is, because it's tough to lump everybody into just one big generic group. I think you have a problem with that. But just coming back to entering into the profession for a second, I have a son that's in his third year in college, and he just completed his EMT. My daughter also, my older daughter, did as well a couple of years ago. They both have EMT, and my younger son got his IV cert and everything, and he's been in the ER, and he's ridden on ambulances. He's still in college, so he's not working for any service, and he's had some really fun calls. Now, for us who have been in the business for a while, a cardiac arrest is kind of a ho-hum deal, but for a young kid, that's just really exciting to watch all of CPR and all of that. And so, he's really excited about it. But, I think he'll make his own decision as to what he does after he graduates. But, the fact is, I think just looking at the profession from the outside, he and everybody else that goes into that has to understand that there's not a heck of a lot of money in there. And I know we've talked, about other things besides money, but I think it is part of the equation. And if I'm in my son's position or anybody else that is thinking about going into EMS, I think you do have to think about, what if I have two or three kids down the road, and my wife, is she going to have to work, or can she be at home, or how are we going to make this work? And I think, you're not really being thorough and complete unless you look at those issues. I realize a lot of people don't, but I think that's not very practical. And it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle in some of the healthcare fields, how to make a reasonably good living so that you're happy. And I think that is a factor. But beyond that, once the person's in the field, in the profession, and to get them to stay, it seems to me that there needs to be some options available for them in terms of career advancement. For those who want to stay in the field and that's what makes them happy, great, you can provide that. But for those who want to be in management, who want to educate, who want to provide leadership, want to get involved at the state level, I think, to keep people involved and motivated to stay with the service or at least the profession, there have to be those options available.
Tom, do you have any wisdom or any sage words into this topic?
I don't have either of those, but I absolutely agree with Dave. I think I don't think a manager is somebody who can motivate EMTs to stay. What you do is you surround yourself with good people. You make it as easy and as logical for them to do their job as possible. I think the other side of the coin is probably what we do poorly, and that is we hire somebody, we expect them to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and be nice to somebody, and we treat them like crap. We give them so many rules to memorize that they can't possibly memorize them, and then we say, you break this rule 3 times and you're fired. I worked someplace one time where if you damaged an ambulance 3 times, you were fired no matter what. And they enforced that rule whether you worked in Olathe, Kansas or Long Beach, California. There's a big difference between driving in those two different environments, a big difference. And if somebody came to you and said, let's say you were a supervisor, and they came to you and they said, I was just backing into a parking space. My partner was inside getting supplies. I know I was supposed to use a backer, but there just wasn't one, and I bent this mirror. Well, I was supposed to give them a written warning for that, and it counted as much as if they smashed the whole front of the ambulance. That's just one thing. Another thing is I worked someplace one time where we had 14 paydays where the human resources department or the payroll department couldn't get the damn payroll straight. That's an insult. That's an absolute insult. I think there are things. There are things that are important to people, and they all begin with S. I don't know if they all begin with S, but a whole bunch of them do. So, like, safety's important. These are things you don't mess with. These are things that people get mad about. Their safety's important. Their spouse is important. Their schedule's important. Their salary's important. Their sense of personal significance is important. There's probably, I don't know, maybe another 5 or 6 of them. And if you look at those things, they're straight out of Maslow, I think it's a good idea for us to stop promoting managers just because they were good paramedics. There's a big difference between the way people think to become a good paramedic and the way they think to become a good manager. A really good paramedic is somebody who has a reactive skill set. They wait for something awful to happen, and they stabilize it, and they get it over with, and they put their ambulance back together, and they're ready for another call. But a leader has to be somebody who is a planner. That's a learned behavior set, just like being a good paramedic's a learned behavior set. And we have always equivocated those two things as though they're the same thing. I think, when we promote people, we need to teach them how to lead people. Because people don't do this for the money, you don't treat them like bricklayers. They might be, everything good about an EMT or a paramedic has a dark side. So, in order to do their job well, they got to be a little bit sensitive. Sometimes they're too sensitive. Sometimes they're needy, you know. You've got to be able to put up with that, you know. You just have to, you have to have a feel for these people. You have to like them. You have to like the way they think. You have to like the things they laugh at, you know. And they're people readers, so if you don't like them, they get it, you know. I don't know. Those are just kind of foundational things. I don't know everything about this, but those are the worst mistakes I've seen made fall kind of into those categories.
Well, have either of you, or even Ben, have you guys ever used something to motivate people that didn't work?
Well, we've had, I mean, I don't know how to answer that exactly, but I think, yes, we've, you know, in our agencies, especially at AMR, I can think of, you know, people that haven't been able to perform for whatever reason, you know, and we've identified that, and we want to try to keep them on. We want to try to encourage them to get better. I mean, I can think of one individual that we've had still employed with us that, you know, we eventually concluded probably had a learning disability. And, you know, we got together and we decided, you know, should we cut him loose because we just don't think that he's going to be able to grasp the fundamentals that we need, or can we work with him and help him in some way, shape, or form? And we actually sent him to the Sylvan Learning Center for several thousand dollars, and, you know, because we wanted a little diagnosis and we wanted some help, and he had a learning disability and he struggled through and eventually, you know, went from being what we call a wheelie or wheelchair assistant guy to being an EMT, and he's been one of our better EMTs. He really has. Mm. And so there, you know, we thought there was potential. We weren't sure how to get it. The easy solution was to cut him loose, but we tried to find, you know, the value in keeping him and what he could bring and if he could get help, and we were able to, you know, to be pretty successful with that. And you know, sometimes, you know, from my perspective as a medical director, it's a clinical issue. You know, somebody's not measuring up for whatever shape or form. Can we, you know, we have this going all the time. And can we bring them in and, you know, get them some extra training, remediate them? Our staff and our CES office will do that. I'll do it. And we'll try to keep them on, encourage them to get better or to learn more so that, you know, they can come up to speed. And we want people to feel like, you know, we aren't going to cut them loose just because they make a mistake or they're you know, they're just not able to test well. You know, we'll work with them for a while. It benefits us. It benefits them. But at some point, you do have to kind of, you know, potentially throw in the towel. But I can think of a number of times in a number of agencies where we've worked our butts off to try to keep people. I've got a person like that in one of my other agencies where we've got her on a 1 year period of time, and she's paired with one of our best paramedics, and their ongoing evaluations provided. We could let her go and just tell her, but we see value in her if she can kind of get some things worked out. So I think that along with that, and one of the things that I try to do as a medical director, and if I believe in a dispute, in a situation that involves, say, one of our EMTs or medics against a hospital or another doctor or an ER or whatever it may be, and, you know, people are hollering at me, you know, you've got to do this, and this about this person, you got to fire them, you know, this is wrong and everything. And if I think they're right, and I believe they follow protocol, I will never throw them under the bus. Never. And on the other hand, if I think they've really let us down and they can't be helped, we'll cut them loose in a heartbeat. And I think that, I hope that our people get that sense that, you know, that I will, if I think they've done, you know, reasonably close to what they should have done, I will protect them as best I can. And I've done that many times, and I hope that that's a motivator for them.
Hmm. That's good. Well, I'll tell you a mistake I've made once, and I'm new in my EMS career here. So, I one time I somebody came in to me and said, I need more money because I don't get paid, blah, blah, blah. And I said, all right, that sounds okay. I think I can definitely handle that. So, you know, gave them a raise, and, you know, they were motivated, and they were the greatest employee for about a month. And then they fell right back into their old habits. And I ended up, we ended up letting that person go. But it was a valuable lesson for me to go, you know, something else in that person's life was wrong, and more money didn't fix it. Better hours wasn't going to fix it. Me moving them to a new ambulance wasn't going to fix it. It was definitely about, and that's what I find most often. If something's wrong at work, it's not because of something at work. It's something tertiary to things that we have no control over, but it gets dragged in. And, you know, whether they're, you know, they're having problems at home, or whether it's financial, or whether whatever the case may be, we can't solve those issues. But I think sometimes we get pulled into those. And I don't know if this is the same with every employer, but I really feel that in EMS we see it more because of the type of role we do. We want to make sure that our people are out there taking the best care of the people that they come in contact with, because truly it is a trust. It's a public trust to go into somebody's home and treat them at 2 a.m. and be honest and be as happy and as cheery as you can be while somebody is getting close to death. And, you know, I'm not saying that everybody needs to be like, oh, hi, but I think that they need to be at least positive and that and caring and wanting to hold somebody's hand. And I, you know, like I say, I don't know, maybe you guys have found something different, but that's been my general rule. Is somebody comes into me now and says such and such is da 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 da, and they have a bad mood, and they're doing all of the steps I see toward what I would think is them terminating employment, whether it's through me or through themselves. And and so that I try to intervene quickly and go, hey, you know, your partners are saying this, what's going on? And I know it's probably not here. And, you know, I have found that's a very successful tool, because those people will come back to me and either they'll quit, they'll say, yep, it was something here and I'm dealing with it in my life, thanks, can I have some days off? Yep, no problem, go take care of your life. And they come back a much different person. And they come back with an appreciation that we cared about them. And I think that maybe that's the key. I don't know. Maybe the key is that leadership has to care about your people.
Well, I think that it's, you know, the things that I like to think about, you know, descriptors are number one is loyalty, I think. And then kind of closely tied to it is integrity and trust. And, you know, it's a lot like, you know, the important values that you need to have in your own family. And if both the employee and the managers and the leaders remember that, you're going to have a good agency. Because if you're loyal to each other, you know, that's your first thought. And with that, you know, you need to have an honesty and an ability to honestly assess. And once you've made those determinations that, yeah, you know, this person is doing their best, is working hard, well, we're going to be loyal to them. And hopefully the employee is going to be loyal to the company or the service. And I think those are really fundamental values, those three things. And if you have that, you're able to have it, you know, pretty much a two-way dialogue between the management and the employee. And if that gets breached, or if it's just not working out, then the employee may have to go. But if those are at the forefront, it doesn't mean we're going to protect, you know, ad nauseum an inept or incapable employee. Far from it. But our sense is, number one, you know, that we have a bond with our staff, and you know, we're going to work through the problem. You know, it's certainly not going to keep people that, you know, want to move on for whatever reason, no matter what. Especially, you know, with the pay realities and things like that. But I think it's pretty important.
I find that my best days are when I constantly reminding myself that people are people and not just employees. I think my biggest lesson learned so far in my, like, coming up on a year as a frontline supervisor here is it's the communication and the FaceTime. The more FaceTime I can get with my guys, it seems like the better off I am. And I kind of started off with this idea that they wanted to kind of be left alone, and you know, you do your job and I'll leave you alone and everything else. And if something needs, you know, if I need to communicate stuff with you, I'll, you know, keep in touch with you by email and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, you never communicate with us. You don't tell us anything, and you're never around, anything like that. And well, my God, excuse me.
Oh, great. There goes our iTunes clean tag. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Ben.
I need a little bleep button. We need to be on a time delay here.
I'll find it and we'll put something in there.
but I'm finding that the more FaceTime I can get with my guys, if it's shift meetings or going around to the stations and just talking to them for a few minutes or whatever, the better. I'm doing a lot better with that.
I think you're absolutely right. And what you're doing is you're being with them. You know, I think that's absolutely right. And closely allied to that is to thank them once in a while for doing a good job. You know, we're really quick, you know, when somebody makes a mistake or gives the wrong dosage or something like that, to make sure they get a QA form, you know. But more often than not, they're doing a pretty good job. You know, people show up at work in the morning and they don't come in, they say, I'm going to screw up today. They don't do that, you know. They come to work and they do the best they can most days. And once in a while, it's a good idea, I think, to thank them for that and do that in front of their peers. And likewise, when you do have to criticize them, do that privately.
Well, these are great topics, and considering the lateness of the hour, and I just thank you all for your time. We're coming up on an hour, and I just want to try to keep this at an hour as much as I can. Do you guys have any final thoughts? Well, hearing none. Hey, Dave. Tell me again those great websites you are involved in and all of the great things you're doing.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'd characterize them as all great things, but what I am doing is I am at gems.com about every other month in writing a column called Case in Point. And actually, I'll be coming out with the second part of a little two-part series. I did one earlier this month on my little experience with the Democratic National Convention up in Denver that was recently here, and I was in attendance for part of that, and it kind of led me to quickly before the elections review the McCain and the Obama health plans and how they may impact EMS, so I'm hoping to have that out in my column by early October. And so that's what I'm doing with gems.com, and I have an article that's kind of percolating through the EMS1.com website that has to do with a little interview that I did for Reader's Digest recently where a number of physicians, including me, were asked, what was it about patients that really kind of bugged you? It wasn't about all of the, you know, the good things that patients do in our good relationships, because there are plenty of those stories, but they wanted things that that bugged or frustrated me, and I basically described the patients that we encounter sometimes who just seemingly are unable or unwilling to fix some of their own fixable health problems. And then I talked about the ever-present threat of malpractice suits and how that alters my practice. So what I did was I took that idea and I kind of wrote about that a little bit and then expanded it out to solicit some input from EMS. And that has not been published yet. It's, I think, coming. And then the last thing I do with pretty regularity for those people that are doing critical care transport or doing air medical transport, I write a series or either write it or edit it depending on what we're doing with it. It's called Case Review, and it's in the Air Medical Journal, which is published every 2 months.
Wasn't that good? I thought it was great. We did.
No, I mean my part. I was in the in the middle of a soliloquy there, and I think maybe somebody just got bored at the switch or something like that.
The hotel cut us off. They said that we could no longer use the service. They were getting ready to kill us. So hang on. Let me add in a few more people here, and then we'll wrap it up.
I'm getting good at this Skype thing. It's kind of fun.
I know. Me too. Finally. Oh, I lost Tom. I lost Tom Dick. That's what happened.
Ben's coming up.
Hey, there's Ben. Hey, sorry. We just lost everything on Skype, so I don't know what happened. But hey, Ben, tell us, what are you involved? You've got www.prehospitalsomething.com?
Yeah, I've had sitting around for a while as www.prehospitalblog.com. Would be kind of a middling EMS blog. I'll talk about my general thoughts on the industry and things like that. Boy, there's that, and I have to say that's about it.
You're not doing any other geeky things with your time?
Geeky things? No, not directly related to EMS.
You're not trying to bring down the entire the universe as we know it, huh?
No, not yet. I'm not disgruntled just yet. So.
Oh, you're not disgruntled? Oh, wow. That.
Not as of yet. I figure it'll come.
Yeah, nothing's great like a. Like a disgruntled ex-EMT IT guy. Yeah, that's great. Well, I can't get Tom Dick back, so we'll wrap this session up. And I thank you guys for your time. I hope to hear from you guys next week. It was awesome, and I hope our listeners agree. You can find us every week at www.emsgarage.com because, you know, I found the best conversations I've had in my 18 years in EMS have been in the EMS garage. So I thought, why not call it that? Thanks, guys, and have a good night.